session, since it's just us tonight. Other council members will listen to this later to sign off for this training. So, we are going to call to order our work session. It is Tuesday, July 16th at 6:00 PM. We are meeting in the Seacoast Community Center. And the only item on our agenda for the work session is our annual sexual harassment training, which will be performed by Hawkins. The time is yours.
Great. Well, thank you for having me today. My name is Ryan Frazier. I'm attorney, as was noted, with the law firm of Curtin McConkie. Joel and some of the others here at Cedar Hills invited me to come out to give a presentation on sexual harassment. So this should be one of your more interesting meetings. I do say that a little facetiously. I imagine that you're thinking, well, we have to do this out of obligation, so, you know, make the best of it. Hopefully it will be very informative, and that the information that's presented, you know, will be of use. The reality is, this is information that's really a hot topic right now. It's not new. Sexual harassment and issues like this have been going on for decades, obviously. That's probably back until the beginning of time in reality. But what we recognize in the law has been, since the 50s, it really got its traction in the 70s and 80s. And then more recently, with what we've all heard of the Me Too movement, which has become very prominent. So I think for that reason, this will be an interesting discussion. Feel free to weigh in, ask questions, anything. A lot of what I present today will also be presented tomorrow to the employees of the city. And so there will be a few things that I probably present to you that I don't present to them. But at the same time, just out of curiosity, for tomorrow, is it everybody, regardless of position, supervisor?
Yep, everybody. You got the whole crew. Okay.
So maybe I won't kind of quite as short, because some of the things are more geared toward the employer side, and some are more for the employee. Things I'm going to present to you today will probably be both sides, just because I think it's interesting that way, and it's important, I think, to see how it plays out in the law and goes from both sides. So as we talk about this today, we're going to talk about really, one, where there can be potential liability. Two, you know, what's going on in the workplace and why it's happening, and really, how does the law define sexual harassment, and what are some key things that employers like the city can do to avoid liability in these contexts? And frankly, you know, I say it as a lawyer, to avoid liability, but reality is just to have a workplace where people want to work. You know, you want to create one that's a workspace that's inviting, and one where people want to be a part of the workplace, and not one where they feel like they're being challenged all the time, and where they feel like they're going to be oppressed or harassed. And so this isn't just how you comply with the law to avoid liability, but how to make your workplace someplace that people want to be. Now, I'm not going to hit a lot on discrimination tonight, but I do think it's important to understand a little bit about the background of where this all comes from. And so we'll hit, in particular, discrimination on the basis of sex and sexual orientation, but I'm going to get into a very high level. If you want me to drop down into a little more detail, I don't necessarily have slides on that, per se, or at least in this presentation, but it's something we can discuss. Certainly that even is related to all of this. And it gives rise to this whole concept of harassment and where that comes from. So just generally speaking, let's talk really quickly a little bit about Title VII and gender discrimination and even other laws that are applicable. You know, frequently I think most people know that it's illegal to discriminate on the basis of sex or gender. And often when I do a presentation just on those kind of things, I usually break out what is the difference between sex and gender. I think a lot of people think of them as interchangeable terms. And the law kind of treats them the same way, but it also breaks it down a little bit, in particular in this day and age where we've got transgender people and things of that nature. They really break out the two. Nevertheless, the law applicable to both is going to be, it's simply illegal to discriminate on that basis. And so what does that mean? And we're going to talk a little bit about that. Pregnancy discrimination. Most people may or may not be aware that it is illegal to discriminate on the basis of pregnancy. What that means, if a decision or an employment actions being taken because somebody is pregnant. That right there can be sex discrimination under the law, both under state law and under federal law. Gender stereotyping is an interesting one. I won't get into the background because there is an interesting history on this. But what gender stereotyping is discrimination based on the fact that somebody doesn't fall within what we perceive to be typical or usual gender norms. Kind of the way you perceive a male being male or female being female. We often use terms like masculine or feminine to describe these kind of things. And people don't always fit within this. Certainly, somebody that's transgender wouldn't fit within that. But at the same time, even you may find a woman who's more masculine using that term in a traditional sense, or somebody that's a male more feminine in a traditional sense. And the law is basically saying we need to get away from making those value judgments when making employment determinations. And so that's what gender stereotyping is, and you can have discrimination based upon that. And then, of course, sexual harassment, which is the big one that we're going to talk about today, so I won't spend a lot of time there. The EEOC, and even Utah's counterpart, UALD, is very focused on these things. And some of the things you're going to see is equal pay. That's been a hot button topic for decades. And it seems the more they try, even though there are laws in place, the gap just continues to be there. And they haven't been able to close that. So that's been a priority of the EEOC. In addition, family responsibility discrimination. This ties into that pregnancy idea. But also, even after that, there are other laws that relate in the FMLA, which is the Family and Medical Leave Act, and different things along those lines. And then discrimination on the basis of childbirth, pregnancy, and related medical conditions. And so you can't discriminate on any of those bases. Some state laws also include sexual orientation. In fact, the state of Utah includes that. And so you can't discriminate on the basis of somebody's sexual orientation or on the basis of their what we call gender identity, which is that transgender status. And so that's Utah state law. Federal law in this circuit has not arrived there yet, but the law is very quickly evolving. Another presentation that's highly interesting that I'm not going to get into, but just be aware it is illegal to discriminate on those bases as well. Now that's a little bit of background. Another related concept is this concept of hostile work environment. And I want to talk a little bit about that, and it certainly relates to discrimination. But what ends up happening is we're going to talk a lot about that in the sexual harassment idea here in just a minute. But it's important to understand what it means. And so it's important to understand that a hostile work environment is when there is the terms and conditions of the workspace have been changed or manipulated in such a way that an employee doesn't feel comfortable. They feel like they're being either targeted or oppressed or discriminated against on the basis of age, race, religion, gender, disability, national origin, any of the normal protected statuses that under the law you can't discriminate for, you can have a hostile work environment. Typically, this is a situation where you've got epithets, jokes, comments, these kind of things. They're so pervasive that somebody feels like they just can't work in this space because it's inherently discriminatory. Usually, in that instance, though, an off remark or something like that, in and of itself, will not be enough under the law, particularly if the employer does something about it. And the other thing to remember is not all harassment is illegal. You may say, well, wait a minute, Ryan, why would you be telling me what's something like that? And that's simply because, frankly, although it may not be proper, it may not be advisable, but there are some things that are just simply not illegal. You know, you could harass somebody for being odd. You know, oddity is not a protected status. Now, if it comes within one of those things we've talked about, such as a gender stereotype, well, that probably would be. So it has to be one of these statuses that are protected under the law. Otherwise, harassment isn't illegal. However,
right, like I've seen some, like someone being a Los Angeles Lakers fan.
Right.
I've seen that rise to the
level.
And maybe that should be.
Which is, I thought it was over the top and actually quite mean. But right. You're saying they are mean, but that is not discrimination.
Right. Now, your policy, of course, may say, well, we don't tolerate that either. And that's wonderful, certainly enforced, right? But it's not illegal. You know, Joel may be a Lakers fan. I mean, we won't hold it against him. But, you know, we can harass him all we want on that basis, right? So, but that is a good example. I mean, things like that are not illegal in the law. And that's what my point is there. So, but having said that, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily proper. And you still, you know, overarching all of this, I'm talking today very legally. But if I were to really boil it down to what should we be doing, so treating people with respect and that's right. If we create cultures of diversity and inclusion rather than harassment, even whether it's illegal or not, usually we're not going to have any problems in this anyway. I mean, that's really the solution at the end of the day. But anyway, let's get into the law on sexual harassment. Mainly because you've got that 1 hour obligation, right? And you'll be able to say, wow, I survived this. So, what is sexual harassment? This is, you know, I think this is really the question that most people have. What is it? How does it even apply? It is a form of sex discrimination. It's recognized both under federal law and under state law. And many other statutes, sometimes there are city ordinances. I mean, you know, the city here could pass them and have protections against these things. But both Utah law and federal law prevent sexual harassment. So if we talk about it, here I'll actually refer to the actual language in the slide because I think it's very pertinent. As it says, it's unwelcome sexual advances, requests for sexual favors, and other verbal or physical conduct of a sexual nature when, first, could be submission to that conduct is made a term and condition of employment. That may sound like the most obvious kind, but we're going to talk a little bit more about that in depth. I think that's the one that everybody would recognize as sexual harassment. Beyond that, submission to or rejection of that conduct is used as a basis for employment decisions affecting the employee. In other words, you're tying action to, either submitting to, or because you refused to accede to a certain sexual favor, you then hold that against the employee and cause them to suffer in some employment context. Or that the conduct has the effect of unreasonably interfering with an individual's work performance or creating a hostile or offensive work environment. Now, we already talked about a little bit the concept of a hostile work environment. And we'll get into that a little bit more. And really, if you look at those two, they can be boiled down into two different kinds of sexual harassment that have been recognized in law. The first one is quid pro quo sexual harassment, and despite the fancy Latin term, it's probably the one that most people are familiar with. And then the other one is the hostile work environment. And that's probably the term more people are aware of, but don't quite understand what it means. It is quid pro quo. So let's talk about quid pro quo here really quickly. Loosely translated, it's something for something, right? And what we're talking about here is when an individual's submission to or rejection of sexual advances affects them based on employment decisions. This is typically comes in a situation where you have a person in authority over somebody else. That's 9 times out of 10 where this is going to come in. So it's a supervisor or somebody with authority who has power over somebody else. And it's the use of that power disparity that really creates the issue. And what they usually do is either request or demand or tie these sexual advances or favors to, hey, if you do this, I'll get you a raise. If you don't do this, I'm going to demote you. You know, if you don't do this, you're going to be fired. This is obvious sexual harassment. I think you probably all knew this in the first place, but this is what quid pro quo is. And any employment decision can still be based upon that. So when we're talking about this, we're talking about what the law calls adverse employment action. So maybe you understand that term, maybe you don't. But that's any time you take an action that adversely affects somebody's benefits, somebody's privileges, rights within the workplace. And it could be from the most egregious, being termination or being fired, down to as minimal as just being written up. That you know, somehow this is tied to that. And all of that is going to fall under this quid pro quo sexual harassment. Or it's just made a term of employment. You're required to do this. Obviously, that would be sexual harassment, but again, it has to do with the harasser's power. And that's where you, the city supervisors, anybody with authority over somebody else, needs to understand that what they do can affect the city. And it's important to understand as well that this can be strict liability, meaning that if there is harassment there, it can just be automatic, boom, you're done. And because it's so obvious, so egregious. And so supervisors need to be aware that this just is not acceptable. And you may say, well, Ryan, this is obvious. Well, what about the condition when you have a supervisor who starts to date a subordinate? At first, maybe it's consensual. The relationship is fine. But what if they break it off and there's still the relationship of authority? It can create all sorts of problems. How does that then affect this? And then there are a lot of times where you will have quid pro quo that stems from relationships gone bad. Now, some people have said, well, Ryan, should I then just ban relationships in the workplace? I typically wouldn't go that far either. I think that's usually a bad idea as well. It can create all hopes of other problems. But as you can see, it creates problems. There are other employers that say, well, then I want to have a policy where they have to disclose. And some people even have, well, you have to sign a contract that says under certain circumstances, this is what you'll do. Problem is sometimes employers get a little heavy-handed going too far. The other way is a reactionist. But you can see why, because it's strict liability. And so this is why supervisors need to understand that once that relationship comes to an end, it really needs to come to an end, and there needs to be a wall drawn there. And yeah, the employer does almost have to get involved in the relationship to a certain extent to prevent liability.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's say I'm a junior employee, me and a colleague are both in the exact same position.
Yeah.
My colleague starts dating the supervisor.
Correct.
And then all of a sudden my colleague gets a promotion I thought should have been mine.
Correct.
Would I have a claim potentially against the city simply because I, you know, there's the promotion of my colleague over me is, you know, clouded, you know, because of that dating relationship?
There's not, well, they always potentially could sue, right? I mean, as you know, the lawyer, there's always that potential. But certainly, I think your word clouded is a good one. Because, yeah, it can potentially create some problems with liability. Because what ends up happening is, it certainly has that look, right? That, well, it was quid pro quo. I mean, that's the other problem I haven't addressed, and you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's, well, what if two people are dating and somebody's in authority, and then this person's getting privileges that the others are not. Really what that comes down to is even though it's still a form of sexual harassment, even though it's not directed to the person that may be involved in the relationship. And you may cast it as, well, that is a discrimination. But that is a problem. Now, technically it's only illegal if the decision was made because of that. But how, you know, proving that it's not good one, right? I mean, it already looks bad. And so, that becomes part of the problem. Here I talk a little bit again about those concepts of the adverse employment action and, you know, being forced to participate. And so this is something, but I think, Joel, you hit the reverse. And so sexual advancement as a condition or basis is just a problem as well. You know, the employer dates the supervisor to get a better performance review, similar to what you were talking about. Or the employer rejects an advance and is overlooked for a raise. And these are just a couple of examples where that happens. And when we talk about sexual advances, we're of course thinking probably real intimate relations. But this could even be asking somebody out on a date. I mean, it could be that simple to have sexual harassment if somebody is overlooked. That's the reason why some employers do go so far as to just prohibit supervisors from dating subordinates. And that, I do think, is frequently a good idea. It's just a matter of policy, because as you can see, you don't want to meddle in people's lives, but at the same time, it's just fraught with problems if you don't. It's much like a nepotism policy that the employers frequently put into place. And I think this is an important concept. This is, just because somebody agrees at first and then changes their mind, or does submit, it doesn't mean that they still can't have a claim. So just because you think, oh, well, they didn't participate in the end and we didn't retaliate against them, it doesn't mean that the initial action still wasn't illegal. Quid pro quo is illegal the minute it happens. And so it's something that you have to take very seriously, and supervisors need to be have the utmost care here. And certainly, I think it creates all sorts of problems, because what this does is it even becomes to a point where if a supervisor imposes themselves, which is even more egregious than the quid pro quo, they're just strict liability. I mean, there's almost no way to avoid it. We are going to talk at the end about something employers can do to protect themselves. There are a couple of preventative measures, but it is tough. So let's talk about the hostile work environment concept. This is one where I think it's much more common. Because the last one, I think most people know that that's a taboo thing and it's off limits. And so you don't get as many cases of that because it's just so brazen. You get a lot more cases of this. And this is the area where you can also get some that just aren't legit. I mean, this is the gray area, right? And so let's talk about this a little bit more. So to have sexual harassment in a hostile work environment, first of all, the conduct has to be so severe or pervasive that it basically creates an intimidating, hostile, or abusive situation. This is where the person just feels oppressed. And sometimes they'll go so far as they will quit. And you may say, oh, well, they voluntarily quit, so it's not illegal. Guess what? There's something in the law called constructive discharge, which is where somebody felt so oppressed that they felt they had no choice but to quit. And the law considers that tantamount to firing somebody. So employers still need to track and make sure that their work environments are free of this hostility, that they don't have pervasive sexual overtones such that it would create this hostile work environment. It also is one when the unwelcome sexual conduct unreasonably interferes with an individual's job performance. I mean, if a person is feeling that they're intimidated and things and they don't feel comfortable in the workplace, I think this is much more common. And I guess I can go this far. You know, recently I did a little bit of work for the city, and I'm going too far on this. I probably won't bring this up tomorrow, but where I did an interview, and I found out that there were other things going on. Now, did it rise to the level of a hostile work environment? Maybe not. But it certainly had the start of it, where people could start to feel. I mean, there were concerns that I had enough that I raised with Chandler and said, you got to tie this down, because if this gets out of hand, you could get to this point. And so it's important to be aware. And I'll tell you, I'm not aware of a single workplace that doesn't have some overtone of this. Now, should it? I would actually say no, but it does. And that's where employers need to step in and kind of take control of this. And that's the reason why it's important. You know, me as the cautious lawyer, I would say none of it should ever be in the workplace. Now, can you completely eradicate it? I don't know. I mean, people are people, and it's hard to control each and every one of their employees. But this is one, to have this hostile work environment, this just doesn't have to be supervisors. This can be any employees that can actually create this hostile work environment. And that's the reason why this is a problem. And frequently, a supervisor or HR or whomever may not even be aware that this is going on. And so this is the reason why you also need to create an atmosphere where employees feel comfortable about reporting. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that as we go along. But I think that's the reason why it's important. And then finally, the unlawful harassment may occur even though the harassment may not result in a tangible or economic action against the individual. In other words, you can have a hostile work environment even if there's no adverse employment action, as I talked about. They don't have to be fired. They don't have to be demoted. Just the creation of the atmosphere itself can be enough if it's pervasive enough. And that's the reason why it's important to have your finger on the pulse of what's going on. So let's talk about what conduct is unwelcome. Because, you know, I get asked all the time, well, what if we're consensual? What if, you know, we're okay with it? Well, it's dangerous, right? You're always flirting with disaster. But unwelcome is when a person does not appreciate the advances. The reality is, the law looks at it on an objective standard, meaning what would a reasonable person consider? Because you always have that one person, maybe, that is overly sensitive. And so the law tries to look at it and say, well, we're not going to look at the recipient's feelings. The reality is, even though that's what the law is, my experience is that the recipient's feelings still get taken into account. And you have to, you as an employer, have to presume that that's the case, even though it's not the law. Because it still is a factor. In addition, just putting up with a hostile sexual, hostile work environment based on sexual content is not something that somebody has to do. It's not deemed welcome just because you put up with it. Okay? And that's what the problem is sometimes it can still be a hostile work environment, even if the person does not complain. Now, if they don't complain, we're going to talk about how that can insulate you as well as an employer, but that becomes the concern, the reason why you want to know what's going on in your workplace. So when we're talking about this, the general rule of thumb includes anything that can make a person feel uncomfortable, threatened in the workplace. You know, if an objective person is not going to like that, well, we shouldn't be doing that. I mean, ways to kind of measure this is, well, would I want these kind of things to happen in front of somebody like a spouse, or, you know, have these kind of comments in front of somebody that's very close, or a partner, or something like that? If the answer is no, you're probably going too far. I mean, and just even ask yourself, would this make me feel uncomfortable? And how would it make, you know, because some people have a little more tolerance for that. Well, you got to get a sense of what a reasonable person would be. And if you're more tolerant, you have to say, well, maybe I'm not that objective person. Maybe I need to look at how other people feel. And I think that's part of the reason why right now in this Me Too movement, some people tend to backlash and say, well, come on, it's not that bad. Well, maybe they have a greater tolerance. They need to understand they're not everybody. And just again, because you put up with something doesn't make it legal. So again, it can be sexual advances. I mean, that's the most brazen kind. And this is where it's not even tight. I mean, this can be coworker to coworker. Now, just to be really clear, we'll talk a little bit more about this. But if somebody comes up and asks somebody for a date, hey, do you want to go out on Friday night? You think that's sexual harassment? No. And what if that person says, no, I don't, and I'm not interested? And then that person comes back the next week and says, okay, what about this week? You're starting to get into already dangerous ground, right? What if it happens a third time? I think you're probably now creating a hostile work environment. Person said no, you know, you're kind of done. Now, I guess you could say, well, what if it was one of those where they're just, you know, not feeling comfortable? The reality is that just shouldn't exist in the workplace. And yeah, you don't want to get into their dating lives, but in some cases you have to be careful because there can be a claim for sexual harassment just on somebody asking somebody else out. As innocuous as that may sound, if it's repeated and the offers are rejected.
What if it's occurring outside of the workplace?
Hey, well, that's a good question. So I think this is not my next slide yet, but we are going to have a slide on that. But frankly, it's not your job to govern outside the workplace. However, there are a few exceptions to that. If you've got supervisor to underling, again, it's a problem because there's that authority and they can still feel the authority even outside the workplace. So supervisor still almost maybe that, hey, let's not date attitude should be there if possible. But they need to be aware of the problem that creates even outside the workplace. Outside the workplace also can be if it's an employee or sponsored activity outside the workplace. You know, we hold our firm parties. Well, if it happens at the firm party, it may not be in the quote unquote workplace, but it's still work related. And so for that reason, it would also be covered and considered employer coverage. So there are some places, but you know, if it's just they became friends while they were in the workplace and then it happens in the movie theater, well, that's not your job. You don't need to worry about it, unless, again, it's that supervisor. But if that starts to leak into the workplace somehow, that it follows up later on, you do need to be worried about it. So I don't know if that helps, but...
And I was just curious, you know, if you have a situation with two employees who aren't in a supervisory situation, and one is continually asking one out, even though they keep saying no, is there anything that he could do in a situation like that? You know,
I don't think so, yeah, no. I mean, you cannot, discipline somebody for something that happens off-site. Other than I would say, I mean, if you do like a rape or something like that, because it's criminal,
right,
you can take action, right? But yeah, and frankly, if an employee's at will, you can do whatever you want. But although you do need to be careful again, that you don't get them to say, well, you fired me because of my sexual activity outside of work, because you might have a risk here of having some sort of discrimination on the basis of sex. But in reality, I wouldn't worry about it for off-site activity unless it starts to affect the workplace. Now, if you have two people that both work here, and or even they have a relationship with somebody else outside, and they're talking about it here, or things of that nature, that now does affect the workplace. So that still needs to be considered if they're talking about that, because even if it's two people that are totally comfortable talking about it, and between them it's consensual, there are other people that can overhear that may not feel comfortable with the discussion. And so for that reason, still what happens outside can affect the workplace, and that is when you get concerned about it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I welcome coming up. We talked about what that is, the hostile work environment idea, and then if it interferes with their work. But again, Petty slides in the way and says, isolated incidents, unless it's really egregious, aren't usually going to be illegal. You have one sexual comment in the workplace, it doesn't create a hostile work environment by itself. Now, is it improper? Sure. Is it illegal? No. But if the employer doesn't do anything about it, and they're aware of it, then you have it repeat, now you start to have a problem. And so even if you have one isolated incident, employers still need to take it seriously. You know, you're aware of one inappropriate joke. I would deal with it. I would say, hey, you know, well, if you don't do this, you don't necessarily have to write somebody up at that point or even go that far. You just tell them, we're not going to do this, but if it repeats, you know, we may have to take action, we may have to write you up. And if you get complaints, even more so, you have to deal with it. You know, if you have people complaining about what they hear, you can't just let that go. You do have to deal with those complaints and take them seriously, especially in this time. I mean, it's courts take it seriously, the EEOC takes it seriously, and if you don't, it can get back to bite you on liability for it. So even though it's isolated incidents in and of themselves are illegal, you still have to do something. Does that make sense? Intent doesn't always matter. It's the unwelcome nature of the sexual advance. Because the person may say, well, I didn't intend to offend them. It doesn't matter. It's not the intent, it's the actual conduct itself that is inappropriate. And a lot of people might say, well, you know, I didn't intend to offend. I thought everybody was okay with this. It doesn't matter. If everybody's not okay with it, it's still going to be offensive. So that's why intent isn't something that we look at on this. Factors that courts are going to look at. Frequency of the conduct. The more frequent it is, the more it's going to be considered pervasive. The severity. Obviously, if you have inappropriate touching, you're already probably there. I mean, I would say you have sexual harassment, boom, immediately if you have inappropriate touching. Or some straight-up overt advances, comments, things of that nature. Jokes maybe aren't that severe, but they still can make somebody feel uncomfortable. And if you have an environment where jokes are rampant, or even after somebody's complained about it and nothing is done about it, well, you probably rise to the level of severity where you are going to have a hostile work environment. Physically threatening or humiliating, I mean, that obviously is a problem. That kind of bears into the severity. But if something is physically threatening or humiliating, that's going to be a problem right off and needs to be addressed. Or unreasonably interferes with their work performance. And you can tell when that happens. You know, they're not coming to work. They are pulling back. They're not interacting in the office the way they normally would. These are the kinds of things courts look at. And they look at the totality of the circumstances. They look at the whole environment of the workplace and ask themselves, is this something that an objective person would consider a hostile work environment? And so, as I put there, I've already said isolated incidents aren't there, but a single sexual event may constitute harassment if it's linked to the granting or denial of tangible economic employee benefits. That's the quid pro quo idea. Or, the more severe the conduct, the less pervasive it needs to be. you can almost think of it as kind of those, we've seen supply and demand, right, where the things shift, but they, where that X meets. It's kind of the same way, severity and pervasiveness, you know, how frequently. Those two, you know, more frequent, the less severe it needs to be, or the more severe, the less frequent it needs to be before you're going to get to that point. So let's talk about some examples. So verbal conduct certainly can be sexual harassment. You know, talking about sex or sexual experiences, sexual feelings, jokes that are inappropriate for the workplace, stories, you know, asking personal questions. A lot of people really feel inadequate about that. And even if it just be dating questions. You know, somebody says, hey, I don't feel comfortable talking about that. It really needs to come to an end. There shouldn't be pressure or anything like that. You know, innuendos, things of this nature, whistling, even this could be other things that are stated, you know, repeatedly asking for dates, as I mentioned. All of these things can rise to the level of sexual harassment. Nonverbal conduct as well, displaying materials, pictures, for example, that are just not appropriate for the workplace can make people feel uncomfortable. You know, suggestively words or pictures. Gestures, obviously. Giving gifts or other than that, items. Certainly, gifts of a sexual nature can be a problem. But even repeatedly giving just gifts, if somebody feels uncomfortable receiving them, that can also be sexual harassment. You know, looking a person up and down. Maybe you think, oh, well, that's no harm. It still makes people feel uncomfortable, so it certainly has harm. Blocking a person's path. You know, that's one that I think a lot of people don't think of. But if it's done with an effort to try to hit on them or something like that, it's inappropriate. Hindering their movement, invading their personal space, brushing up against somebody, all can be sexual harassment. And then this last one, I think, is one that a lot of employers don't realize, but allowing guests, customers, visitors, here you've got a golf course, allowing them to hit on or make sexual comments about employees. Because usually you think, hey, we don't have any obligation to control our customers or our visitors. But if they're hitting on your employees, you do. And that's where it can become a problem, because you have a duty to protect your employees from those kinds of people. And then I will say, one thing that I found in those interviews that I did is that there were certain customers who were regulars who were kind of giving remarks and different things to people. And the person that was in this, there was not an employee in the city, but certainly was in this food establishment over here, and so it was related. So, you know, do you have a duty to protect that person? It's a little less clear because they don't work for you directly, right? It's on a related, probably the employer there has more of a duty than you do. But certainly, you have a duty to protect your employees in any way. Physical conduct. I mean, this seems like the obvious. Touching, kissing, hugging, massaging. That's good one. Or rubbing somebody's back. You know, a lot of times you'll have somebody come up where they just are trying to be friendly, they would say. It makes people feel uncomfortable. And so all of these things can be certainly sexual harassment. And so here's your question about the outside workplace conduct, right? The employer sponsored functions, off-site but during working hours. If somebody's supposed to work. And where this would come in would be like, well, what if two employees go off at lunch and one makes some remarks while they're at lunch? Well, technically, they're not working for you at that moment, right? They're off the clock. But it gets a little bit closer because they left work, they're both going to be coming back. You know, can somebody create a hostile work environment while they're out to lunch? Possible. And so that's one area where we do need to be careful, especially if they're leaving work and coming right back, right? You know, workplace relationships between the harasser and victim. Or even as Joe pointed out, you've got a relationship that affects somebody else. Social media, text messaging, and other digital electronic media. This is a problem because this does work happen outside of work, right? But things they say, things they do can impact the job. And so this is one where you have to be really careful, because this is the new way of harassment. And it's a way where people feel like they can send messages while hiding behind the electronic device. That it's not so overt, but It still can be a problem. So you do have to regulate what people are doing, especially if they're doing it from workplace computers, if you provide phones, if you provide tablets, anything of this nature, you need to have a policy in place that, regulates that. So
I'm just going to give you, we have about 5 minutes left.
That's right.
Does that work? Okay.
Yep. So this is your policy. I don't know that I need to know this published for you as really with the employees probably tomorrow. So your policies are what they are. So I'll just kind of skip through that. It really is consistent with the law for the most part. I shouldn't say the most part. It's consistent with what the law is, so that's good. Reporting sexual harassment. This is the one area where I do think you need to be aware. The one thing I would say about your policy that I didn't see in there, so Chad, I remember where, is there really should be something in there about reporting. Maybe it's somewhere else, but what was sent to me, I didn't see it in there. And so I need to go back and look. But you really ought to have something that's very clear where employees are advised how to report sexual harassment. And it should be in writing. And then they need to know there needs to be at least two levels for reporting. One to a supervisor. But because obviously the harasser can be the supervisor, and in fact quite commonly is, they need to have an alternative route. Either they need to be able to feel comfortable to other supervisors, or they need to be able to go to human resources and report that. And they should be encouraged. It's hard to require them to do so, but they definitely need to be encouraged to immediately or promptly report that so you can take action. It's difficult for an employer to do something if they're unaware. Now, I think one reason why we are seeing more of this B2 movement is I think the movement itself has empowered individuals, in particular women, to come out and to tell their stories. And so I think more and more people are feeling comfortable telling what happened to them. The problem is, even when people are encouraged, this has been in policies for years, we've had trainings like this for years, and yet people in particular, a lot of women, feel very uncomfortable reporting the harassment. They either feel they're going to be retaliated against, even though they may be told that they're not, or they feel like there's some other reason why there's a danger reporting it. It makes sense, right? It's scary. You don't know how somebody's going to react when you tell them something. It might not be believed, right? This is a well-respected employee here. Nobody's going to believe they would do this, even though they actually did. This person is well-respected, whatever. You can see a lot of reasons why people would feel very reluctant to share. And so it needs to be abundantly clear that they can report. And we need to have them feel comfortable enough that they can do so. And that's the reason why you need to have a couple of levels where they can report it. And it needs to be clear to them that they can report it with impunity, meaning that there is no retaliation, no liability. It just needs to be made very, very clear.
Right. How much time can pass? I mean, some people might sit on this for a long time, sure, and don't know what to do. How much time can pass between the thing that happens and the reporting?
And there's no requirement under the law. Okay. I mean, it could be 10 years, right? Now, obviously, if it was a stray statement or a joke and it was 10 years before, if I were an employer, I'd still do something about that, but I'd probably just go into the person to say, I heard 10 years ago you made a joke, don't do it again. I wouldn't even write them on at that point, because 10 years have passed, if it hasn't happened again, they'd probably change their ways. If it was sexual assault, you report it to the cops and you deal with it immediately. I mean, that person would probably let go. So even after 10 years, right? And so you have to kind of use your judgment in what to do about that. But a lot of people haven't felt comfortable. And if they're coming out later, you still need to take it seriously. And you shouldn't ever say, oh, it's been too long, let's not deal with this. Because then that person just feels like they've been victimized all over again. You need to make them feel comfortable and that you're doing something about it. And it may be bringing a problem. And the worst thing about it is you may have had this problem going on along the whole time. That's the reason why you want them to do it immediately. Is you want to put the end of this right now. And so you need to be able to deal with it. But if they don't report, just be understanding that they didn't feel comfortable and deal with it that way. The bigger problem sometimes is maybe by the time they report it, the person's moved on, one who works for you. It's difficult to do anything about that, right? But anyway, these are the things that I would do. Take it seriously, contact HR, what you can do about it, listen, participate in the investigation if appropriate. I would conduct an investigation in most instances. Take appropriate action, follow up. The nice thing is we did an investigation on the one. I thought it was entirely appropriate how it was handled. And then these are what supervisors need to do. Don't prejudge, don't offer an opinion. You shouldn't weigh in one way or another, either supportive or against. I mean, if you're against, it's just going to make that person feel victimized. And if you're supportive, that's great, but the problem is you don't know anything yet, right? And so what you say is, okay, we're going to take this seriously, we'll look into this, we're going to conduct an investigation. And you tell them those kind of things.
Yeah.
Afterward, once you've done the investigation, then you can take an opinion. But you do it at that point. You know, don't accept opinions or assumptions from anyone. Hear them out, hear their story. Don't play safe, and most importantly, don't delay. As soon as you find out, you know, you ask what about if somebody else waits to report it. Well, that's okay, because they're the victim. But you don't delay in taking action. The city just can't wait. And once you hear about it, you need to be taking not prompt, but immediate action on this. And so, and in some cases, that may mean suspending somebody, right? That may mean putting them on paid leave and getting them out of the situation, particularly if the severity is real. And anyway, these are some things that a supervisor should do. I'll probably go over this a little bit with them tomorrow. But you may need to adjust work schedules, like I said, put somebody on leave, and then everything needs to be confidential and secure. And they should feel that. When they come in, they report and you say, okay, we're gonna have an investigation, we will keep this all secure. The last thing that I would say, and I don't have it on here, is you almost always should have a closeout with that person. That when it comes to an end, you give them a letter and you say, we conducted an investigation. You don't need to say what anybody said, but you say, here's what we've determined based upon that, and here's the action we're taking. And I would have it in a written form that you present to the victim so that they realize you took it seriously, and they know, even if nobody else does, what you did about it. I think that's really important. That they feel like you are taking action. Whether it means you let that perpetrator go, whether you just discipline them, whatever you did. Of course, it would all depend on the severity and what they did. But in some cases, I would say sexual harassment, if it is, especially if it's severe, termination is really the only option in many instances. So if it's somebody made a joke that went off color, well, maybe you just say, all right, we're going to write you up this time, don't do it again, or you could be fired. But if it's straight up sexual harassment, quid pro quo, there's no reason for it. If it's inappropriate touching, anything like this, you probably don't want to keep that person around. Anyway, potential liability, I already talked about how there's automatic liability for supervisor and employee. and then, we talked about what adverse employment action is. This is the one thing I want to hit. There are a couple of things where the employer can avoid liability in some hostile work environment cases if they do two things. One, the employer reasonably tried to prevent and promptly correct harassing behavior. Your policies are important. You need to have trainings with people so that they're aware. Fortunately, you're already doing that. We're doing that tomorrow. Should make that mandatory. And that's how you're trying to prevent. Make it clear that your employees have read the policy and that they're aware of it. But then, when you find out about harassing behavior, you took prompt action as well. And then finally, the employer unreasonably failed to take advantage of any preventative or corrective opportunities. This is where, if they fail to report it to you, it actually can harm them like that. If you're doing everything that you can and then they don't report it. Again, if they take a long time in reporting it, you don't hold that against them. But if they fail to report it and then sue you, it might give you a defense. We would have taken action had we known, right? Anyway, so I don't know that we need to get into the rest of this, but any questions?
No.
All right, one small thing.
Sure.
Just not to scare you, but actually to scare you a little bit. There's a double standard in the law for elected officials. Recently, the mayor of Grantsville, they did an investigation on him for alleged allegations of sexual harassment. They found it didn't rise to the level of criminal behavior, or really actual behavior, just kind of internal discipline on him. The Salt Lake City filed a grammar request for that. Okay. Our firm actually represented the city of Grantsville on that. We went to the State Records Commission. We won on every single point convincing.
Well, you know, they, you know,
and then, this drives me crazy, they said at the end, but it's in the public interest because he's an elected official to release these records. So at that point, the city's like, we go to the courts, we spend a whole bunch more money, we're able to settle with Salt Lake Tribune after redacting certain portions of the report. It just, I hate to scare you, but it's true. You have an elected official, there is a double standard, and there's a higher standard on you. So be ultra careful, really, on these things. If ever in doubt, don't hesitate to call me. If I can't give you a really good answer, or we have Ryan on it, I think it's as good as we have in the entire state.
Any other questions?
Okay.
Well, thank you, Chandler. You can
wait
tomorrow and see
we
how the chip prepared.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can I just pull this out?
Yeah.
Chandler, from the regular agenda, is there anything that you need to discuss for a work session? Or for you?
Need is a strong word. Is there anything the council wants to hear?
Do you want a 10-minute break, or do you want to call that something before?
I don't think I have any questions on it.
Okay. Yeah. Then I'll take a motion to adjourn work session.
I'll make a motion to adjourn work session.
I'll second that. Motion made and seconded. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Very adjourned.
So we've been working on amendments to the policies and procedures.
Mm-hmm.
Under state under city code today, that the council and state ones that approve those changes.
Okay.
My daughter's
yeah.